Hey friends, you're going to be rewarded today if you are listening to this podcast as it is airing, because next week, June 20th, we have got a very special webinar that I want to invite you to. It is from our friends at Leadership Pathway. Listen, I know that growing churches like yours, you're trying to think through, hey, where are our next leaders coming from? Where is the next you coming from? And you've wrestled with this. You've thought about internships or maybe residency, and you're not sure where to start. Well, listen, we've pulled together an incredible webinar next Thursday at 12 noon Eastern with our good friends at Leadership Pathway. Dave Miller will be joining us. We've also got an incredible church that we're going to be diving under the hood and really looking at their residency program and trying to apply those lessons to your church and answering your questions about how to add a great internship program or residency program to your church. Listen, I want you to register for this today. Pause this episode and then go to leadershippathway.org/unseminary. That's leadershippathway.org/unseminary. Get signed up. We'll see you next Thursday. It's going to be a good time. All right, super excited about today's episode. Let's dive in. Let's go.
Welcome to the Unseminary Podcast. Are you looking for practical ministry help to drive your ministry further, faster? Have a sinking feeling that your ministry training didn't prepare you for the real world? Hey, you're not alone. Join thousands of others in pursuit of stuff that we wish they had taught in seminary. Buckle up and let's get started with this week's Unseminary Podcast.
Hey, happy Thursday, everybody. Welcome to the Unseminary Podcast. Super glad that you have decided to tune in today. You're going to be rewarded for that. Excited for today's interview. We've got Sean Lovejoy with us. He's the founder and CEO of Courage to Lead, which is about coaching leaders, and really it's an incredible organization. They've helped not only church leaders, but actually all kinds of other businesses as well. I love Sean's background because he's been a church planner, a pastor, entrepreneur, leadership coach. He's a great friend. He and I had a chance to spend some time together just a few months ago, actually, at the Exponential Conference. So glad to spend some time together with you again today, Sean.
Man, it's great to be with you. And I told you offline, I'll say this for all your guests, I feel like I've finally arrived now that I've been interviewed for the Unseminary Podcast.
Oh, now that's a problem. Now I got to send you $20 and it's damaging to my pocketbook. So I appreciate you being here today. Why don't you tell us, kind of give us a bit of the background. Tell us a little bit of the Sean Lovejoy story. Tell us kind of about your journey.
Yeah. So probably the only part you did not mention is I was a real estate developer. I did not want to be a pastor to begin with. I got a real estate license at 19 years old, started selling real estate. I was making a six-figure income by the time I was 21. And God calls me into vocational ministry. A revival happened in my church, really came out of my college Sunday school class that I was leading. And, God calls me into the ministry, calls me away from the real estate business, went to seminary, moved in Atlanta in 1999 and started a church. And the first 2 years were really difficult. You know, third year we kind of broke through and, you know, we hit 1,000 people and never looked back. But I always felt like an executive trapped in a pastor's body. You know, my best friend, by the best friends were always executive pastors.
Oh, nice. So
I was a nuts and bolts systems process guy. You know, I actually had a strategic plan for my life.
Nice.
So I related better to executive pastor. And I realized a lot of these senior church planters, especially in the early church planting movement, you know, we planted in 99. I was 28. And I just realized I can teach this stuff. So I started coaching leaders in 2001. So I've now been coaching pastors for 18 years.
Wow. Yeah. That's amazing. That's incredible. Now you sit in an interesting spot because, and this is part of the reason why I wanted to have you on the show, because you see not only kind of been in the trenches of lead, you know, whether it's in real estate or in church or seeing all kinds of other churches, but you've had a really unique kind of vantage point where you have kind of been able to see a bunch of church leaders in various, you know, stages of their development. And I'd love to kind of dig into that a little bit. When you think about really, how do, you know, leaders define success? What does that look like? How are they leading? What are the kinds of things that you're seeing, you know, across the board as leaders, particularly in the church front, as they're thinking about leading? What are some of those kind of common threads that you're seeing time and again?
Well, you know, let's talk first about common tensions. You know, just personally, I really do feel like a lot of the anxiety, you know, that we feel as pastors, it really stems from the fact that too many of us get caught up with the world's definition of success. And sort of exchange that for God's definition of success. And we get, you know, overly concerned about growing this thing, you know, bigger and faster than Jesus wants it to grow. And sometimes what's driving us, if we're honest, especially I can talk about us men, you know, it's not always the Holy Spirit. It's often testosterone.
Right.
You know, and I was guilty of that, you know, early on in my ministry. It caused me to become a workaholic pastor. And my wife called me on the carpet. I repented of that. We recovered before things got really weird, you know, and potentially dangerous. And, you know, I get concerned about guys that are growing very rapidly and those that aren't, you know, and it stems from how we view ourselves and how we view success in ministry.
Right. And what did that kind of correction look like? What changed kind of on the other side of that? And I've often joked, I've said this in other contexts, I feel like the voice of my wife is very close. It has a very similar sound to the voice of the Lord in my life. Like, you know, she can see things so clearly. But what did that look like in your own life, kind of on the other side of that?
Yeah, well, you know, I'm just like every other man. I did not see it. You know, and I always tell ladies, in case you're wondering, if you're listening to this podcast and you're wondering, your man is that stupid. Okay. We are that dumb. You know, I've never had a man in all my years of coaching, Rich, say, I totally saw that coming.
Right.
Totally. We need help. We need help. And I did.
Right.
And I thought things were going awesome.
Right.
But I was courageous enough to ask my wife how she thought things were going. And then I didn't get defensive when she gave the answer. And because of that, man, we were able to take back our church at 3 years old and run a healthy rhythm for the next 15. And, you know, when I handed the baton of my church off, which a lot of guys don't get to do at 45 years old. You know, my succession plan happened when I was 45.
Wow. That's amazing.
And when I got done, my wife respected me and liked me, and my kids loved the church, you know, and I say in my book, Measuring Success, that success is ultimately being loved and respected by those closest to you.
Right.
You know, but that's a fight. If we're honest, that's an internal fight. It's a spiritual fight, you know, to win that way in our ministries. Mm-hmm.
And what did some of those rhythms in your life that change? What did that look like? How did you, you know, what did you actually make a difference in your life? You know,
we had a lot of robust dialogue. Patrick Lencioni calls it, you know, we call it intense
fellowship. Yes. Nice.
And we put together a 14-point covenant, and I signed it.
Huh.
And it stayed on my refrigerator for 18 months until it became second nature for us. Things like we would not be out more than two nights a week. That I would, if I would not be at home after five more than a couple of days a week, that I would never walk in the door at the end of the day still on my cell phone. And that's a commitment I've kept for 20 years. You know, sometimes I have to circle the neighborhood twice.
Right. Right.
But one of the things she said to me, you know, back in 2001, she said, I partner with you at the church, but you do not partner with me at home. And
that's good.
I knew I was guilty. And so we even defined, so what communicates partnership to you? And we negotiated those roles out, specific responsibilities. You know, back then our kids were young, and she said, well, if you could just get breakfast together for the kids, you know, so for 15 years, I was the breakfast guy, you know, just what are those things that communicate partnership in the home and the family? And, you know, we still led a great church, you know, and it grew and kept growing. I maybe could have built it a little bigger and a little faster, but I really did work hard at measuring success God's way. And then when I got ready to hand the church off, my identity wasn't just pastor. It was father, husband, all of that stuff. And it wasn't a difficult transition, you know, emotionally, spiritually, because like my identity was no longer in the church.
There seems like there are, you know, and you know this, obviously folks that are listening in know this, that there is, you know, the succession thing is such a huge issue. You know, when we look across kind of, for the lack of a better word, the industry, across churches all across the country, there's a lot of churches staring that down. And I feel bad for leaders in that, because there are some leaders that seem to beholding onto their role because it's so it seems externally. I'm not judging a man's soul, but it seems externally like they're all wrapped up in that job, and there's no distinction between who they are and what they do. But it seems like for you, you were able to early on, by every measure, were able to separate those two things. I am a person, and I also do this job. They're two different things. What are some of those things? Obviously, you've listed some of this now, some of the rhythm on the home side, but what about on the work side? What were some of those things that you were able to do to help kind of define that, to have a healthy kind of balance between who I am and what I do, to ultimately allow you to hand it off to somebody else?
Well, I think first, Rich, it began with my head instead of my heart. You know, I realized that, wow, I am not going to be here forever. I am an interim leader. Mm-hmm. I'm leaving this church. I'm either going to leave when no one wants me to leave or everyone wants me to leave.
Right.
So think about it. Every pastor leaves their church when no one wants them to leave or everyone wants them to leave. So mm-hmm. I would like to leave when no one wants me to leave.
Right. Okay. Right.
That's how I want to go out. And two, it's like leading a company. When I started Courage to Lead, I started from day one building it as if I was going to sell it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to sell it. This is my life. This is my retirement. Right. This is my calling for the rest of my life. But if I build it as if I'm leaving, as if I'm exiting Courage to Lead, it won't all be built around me. And guess what? That's a more sellable, scalable company. You know, it's true in the church too. I mean, strategically, the more I build it around me, the less stable it is beyond me.
Right,
you know, has lots of implications for the decisions we make. And I told our church, this is difficult for us, you know, to leave this church that we started in our living room that grew to nearly 3,000 people, but it doesn't get easier for you 10 years from now.
Right.
You know, it gets more difficult because the longer I'm here, the more it tends to get built around my disposition, my personality, my desires, you know, preferences, all of that. So I do. I think, Rich, a lot of pastors stay too long. There was a time and season, you and I can barely remember it, when pastors got a knock for not staying long enough.
You know,
I think with the mention of the megachurch, the pendulum's almost swung the other way. I think a lot of guys are staying too long.
Interesting. Now, how did you ensure that it wasn't built around you? Like, I think, you know, to grow a church, I think the standard model of a church that size, it's almost like the default. It's like, well, you build it around a personality. And that's not the case. There's a lot of churches that aren't that way, but it almost is like it's built and it will lean into that if we don't push against that. What were some of those practical things that you did to ensure, hey, this wasn't built around me?
Yeah. So it's a whole series of questions that I asked myself that I now talk and coach with other pastors about. One of the leading questions I always ask pastors to ask themselves and ask their key leaders is, am I overexposed? I think a lot of pastors in those churches, especially those run from, you know, let's say 500 in attendance to 2,000, I think they're overexposed. I think they're always around. They attend everything. They tend to be in almost every meeting. And because of that, like when they do walk up on the platform, it's like, oh, here's Sean again. You know, and it's not even, I'm not special. I don't bring anything new to the table because they've all heard it so much. And am I teaching too much? You know, a lot of guys think the church will be, you know, less healthy and falter if they teach less. But I actually think the church is healthier. I think your preaching is stronger and more appreciated if you don't teach as much. You know, so can I build a teaching team around me? You know, secondly, does everything go to hell in a handbasket when I'm absent? You know, if it does, that's a problem. That's on me.
Yeah, that's a problem.
Exactly.
It's not on the team.
You know, I've not reproduced, you know, myself. Mm-hmm. And thirdly, what decisions do I not need to be making?
Hmm.
You know, that affects all the meetings that I don't need to attend. I mean, if they don't need me to make the decision in that meeting, I don't need to be there.
Right.
You know, and all of those things can sort of work you out of a lot. There's a difference between managing and leading. And a lot of guys at those mid-sized churches are managing instead of leading because they're overexposed.
Yes. Yeah. And there's a whole thing there with social media that I think is accelerating that, right? That is making that even, you know, worse. I know for me, you know, practical thing, I've tried to really ask myself, and I had a friend coach me this years ago, say, you know, you need to be, you know, you need to be answering less questions and asking more questions. You know, if you find yourself that like all roads are coming to you and people are constantly asking you questions, something's wrong. You know, we need to be leading much more with question, leading more. Hey, how are you? You know, what do you think? How would you process that? What are some different ways we should think about this? What are three different solutions we could potentially explore? Which of these do you think would, you know, be best for us long term? Leading more with questions rather than with answers. If you find yourself as the answer man, that can be a real problem for sure. So now, Courage to Lead, tell us about that. Tell us what does Courage to Lead do? How do you help particularly churches? I know you don't help just churches, but how do you help particularly churches?
Yeah, well, years ago, we just started focusing on really leadership growth with pastors, helping them, you know, lead themselves to the next level by God's power, and then just creating a healthy rhythm, a healthy ministry. We now call them the three gears of growth: culture, team, and systems, mm-hmm. and the way they all work in unity with each mm-hmm. other. And I bought a little domain called couragetolead.com back in 2008. That was the first time I approached my wife and said, "Baby, what do you think about me handing off the church and just coaching pastors full time?" To which mm-hmm. she responded that day, "Are you kidding me? We're just now enjoying this."
Right. Just hitting your stride kind of thing.
Yeah. God did not bring us to unison right away, you know.
Right.
Finally, by 2014, you know, God just said, "Man, it's time." We felt like our church was in a great place. We had a great team, plurality of leadership, you know, a lot of stallions around me. And mm-hmm. I felt like the church wouldn't implode if I left, you know. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't easy. No transition is ever easy. I wasn't perfect. You know, I handed the baton off reasonably well. But God's mm-hmm. blessed. The church is doing great. And, you know, now it just we've scaled this thing. We have 17 coaches from West Coast, East Coast. I've been spiritual big brother to a lot of these guys, and mm-hmm. we're coaching mm-hmm. pastors as it relates to just how you lead yourself to the next level, how you lead your team to the next level, and how do you create a healthy organization, whether it's in the ministry mm-hmm. or the marketplace. I mean, we're working mm-hmm. with marketplace leaders now. All that's scalable into the marketplace. Leadership and organizational health is scalable. So that's what we love to do.
Now, I've been struck by your latest book called Measuring Success, Your Path to Significance, Satisfaction, and Leading Yourself to the Next Level. What led you to write this book? What kind of got you out in front of this and say, hey, you know, it's not your first time at bat, but what got you thinking, now's the time for us to, you know, to spend that time, invest that time, effort, and energy to make that happen?
Yeah, well, I wrote the book Be Mean About the Vision. You remember that one 3 years ago. It was the whole organizational health side. You know, how do we get clear on the vision and then drill it down, the values, the behaviors, the culture we want to build in our ministry, our organization? This was the whole leadership growth side of things. Mm. You know, how do I become the leader that God wants me to be? And how do I create a leadership development culture, you know, within our ministry, on our team, with our staff, in my family? You know, and so I talk very transparently in there about the mistakes I made early on and being driven by unhealthy things, and then how I learned to become a more focused, disciplined person, living life in rhythm, all that. So this book is really the culmination of like 18 years of coaching and hiccups and speed bumps in my own life.
Right.
How I've learned most of it the hard way, you know, and it's really an executive coaching, leadership coaching book.
Mm. Well, can you kind of walk us through the sort of thing I was struck by? It seems like the kind of book that could be great for teams, and it could be the kind of thing that could be used in either, you know, I could use it with a small group of people, or, you know, we could use it at a staff level. How could you see it being effectively used in the churches that are listening in today to kind of help them accelerate the leadership development piece that's happening in their church?
Yeah. So I specifically, you know, wrote a whole set of reflection and discussion questions, you know, mm-hmm. to go along with the book. And there's instructions how to get that all within the book, because I do feel like it's a conversation not enough church staffs have. Mm-hmm. You know, I also wrote it. I know married couples that are going through it now, you know, together, mm-hmm. pastors mm-hmm. and their wives,
you know,
working through the book together, just to say, these are conversations we need to have. You know, what are mm-hmm. the commitments that we're going to make now? John Maxwell says, make the decision once and manage it daily. The challenge is a lot of us just never make that decision. We never put a stake in the ground in terms of how we're going to value and prioritize our family, stay sane, centered, and married while we're building this church. I'm all for the Great Commission, just not at the expense of the Great Commandment. You know, so those are discussions families need to be having, church staffs need to be having. You know, how do we ebb and flow between intensity and rest as a church, you know, as a staff? It just can't, you know, we can't one up ourselves on every single message series. You know, yes, we're to make fishers of men, but the fish aren't always schooling. You know that. So
learning
to give yourself some grace at times and your staff grace at times and not take every Sunday so seriously. And sometimes they're more serious, you know, than others. So learning to, I just think those are great discussions that church staffs should be having.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm going to play a little bit of devil's advocate here. So first of all, you're great at titles of your books. I think are fantastic. I know there are people who are in the kind of church world who actually the words measuring and success, both of those together, just grate them. They're we should not be measuring things. I just preach the word and whatever God does, it's totally up to him. Why would I bother measuring? And then success, man, who are you? Like, why would you, what does that mean? What are you mean by that? What would you say to someone that's pushing back, even just on the title, would be like, oh, I'm just, this gets me. This just bugs me.
Yeah. It's very, very fair. That's why the two words I think belong together. Everybody has a scorecard. Everybody has a scorecard. Most people don't even know what their scorecard is. They've never nailed it down. They haven't defined success for themselves. And if you don't define success for yourself, the world will define it for you. So we better know. And for example, one of the chapters in the book, I talk about the most neglected metric in the church is love. And Jesus said the most important thing is love. Paul said the most important thing is love. And yet, most of our attention and energy and stress is around productions and programs, processes, and events and problems. And I know some great churches who aren't great at loving each other on their own staff.
Right. How do you measure that though? How do you measure love? How would a church say, oh, we're up 18% on love this year?
Yeah. Well, I think one, stories and feedback from those closest to you really matters. You know, I really do believe success is being loved and respected by those closest to you. So what kind of feedback do I get? Do the people on my leadership team, if I ask, do you feel like you're a better man, woman, husband, father, mother, because you're on this team? Is your life better having served with me, or is it more stressful, and more unfulfilling? I mean, I would ask my team that, always have, and I want that feedback from people. And if I'm putting a burden on them rather than a blessing on them, then we've got an issue. I don't care what we're building and how fast it's growing. That's a problem. What I'm saying? Or if my wife doesn't respect me right now. So a lot of that we can get feedback from those closest to us, and it's so easy to listen to the praise of the crowds, versus the feedback from those closest to us.
Fascinating. Well, pivoting in a little bit of a different direction. So you provide coaching to churches and to church leaders specifically, and not just that, but also, marketplace leaders too. One of the things that I think there's probably people that are listening in today, church leaders that are listening in today, that they know that there's people like you out there that help church leaders. But one of the things I've noticed as, churches grow and they push through, say, that 1,000 barrier and beyond, it does seem to be that the churches that are prevailing and making a difference, they're investing in coaching or services or coaches and consultants like you. And that it's this funny thing because it's like, we don't like to talk about it publicly. Like, it's like, we don't reference it publicly, which is an odd thing. Why do you think that it's important for leaders to have coaches, and obviously your services specifically, but even more broadly, why do you think that is? Why is that an important piece of the puzzle for church leaders to consider?
I think I believe in it so much, Rich, because I was on the receiving end of it. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, I had great coaches in my life. I walked up to Andy Stanley in 1999. I was 28 years old and moved to Metro Atlanta to start a church. And I just said, hey, man, I'm 28. I don't have a clue. Yeah. I've never been a senior pastor. I'm planting a church. Could I buy you coffee? You know, and I ended up being able to be in like a mentoring coaching relationship with him for about 8 or 9 years. Mm-hmm. You know, Sam Chan was a coach. Larry Osborne was a coach. Chris Hodges has been a coach, you know, mm-hmm. of mine. I mean, I've had freaking great coaches. I know mm-hmm. from time to time people are listening to me talk and they're like, I've heard that somewhere before. Of course you have. I don't mm-hmm. have an original thought.
Right.
Yes. Every great thing I've learned from someone fantastic, you know, and I can't tell you how many times I wanted to quit, how many times I was frustrated, how many times I was angry, how many times I was discouraged. Mm-hmm. And I would walk into those coaching relationships with my tail between my legs. Mm-hmm. And every time I left the table, I'm encouraged. I have permission. I'm inspired. I'm ready to have the conversation, make the decision, move forward, you know, in my life. I just know what it's done for me. It kept me from hitting a wall. It helped me from going off the rails. It helped, allowed our church to keep breaking through growth barriers because mm-hmm. someone else had endured the pain, but I got to skip over some of their pain by learning from their mistakes. Mm-hmm. You know, so I was on the receiving end of that for years and years and years and years and just realized, man, I can provide this for others. So that's what we do. You know, I think coaching provides two things. It's permission, you know, and mm-hmm. it's perspective. Mm-hmm. It's both. A lot of leaders just need permission. Yeah, you can do this. Yes, you need to have that conversation. No, they're not going to make it. You're right. No, they're not on board based on what you've told me. They've got to go. You know, whatever, or perspective. Hey, you don't need to go make it up. There are 7 churches who've already figured that out, right, and they have a clear process for it. So why not learn from their pain?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally.
You know, all that. So that's what we try to provide for churches. And I think most pastors think they're waiting on God to grow their church. I actually mm-hmm. think it's backwards. I think God's waiting on us to get prepared for growth.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
You can't presume on growth, but you can get prepared for growth. And our responsibility is to get prepared. I mean, if the attendance we have coming now is crushing us and everybody's stressed out, why would God bring twice as many?
Right.
So we've got to get our system, our team, our culture prepared for growth. And then I think Jesus looks and says, hey, they're ready over there. I'll send the lost people over there. It won't crush them. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. You know, I've spent most of my ministry career has been in that kind of executive pastor second seat. And one of my convictions or concerns has been, I've worked with incredible senior pastors who do a, you know, great job getting external help. But one of the kind of a quiet drumbeat in the background that I've often said to particularly lead pastors, I've said, listen, you don't really have a peer in this organization. And for whatever reason, a lot of times lead pastors, there's just the way they structure their lives. They don't have a lot of peers, frankly. And I think coaching is one of those things that can help you get some of those benefits of peers. Now, you ultimately need to get friends, you know, and in the real world too. But it can provide that kind of support, relational support. And like you say, permission. I love that. You know, hey, here, yeah, take some steps. And then it can ultimately be shortcuts, right? It can be like, hey, here are, you know, the kingdom of God has already figured most of this stuff out. We just got to go and talk to some people and see what they've learned and say, hey, how do I apply those lessons to our church? How do I, you know, take what happened there and apply it to, you know, to us here in this environment? So I just would encourage people, you know, whether it's Sean or other, there's lots of organizations out there that do that. I do that. There's lots of people that do that. But I would encourage you, if you're thinking, I wonder if that's the kind of thing I should be engaged in, I would give you a hearty yes to that. It can take your leadership to the next level. And it's a way for you to, you know, to really, I think, steward what God's given you at your church for sure.
Yeah. Dave Ramsey says, one of my favorite quotes of him, he says, if you're the leader, the bad news is you are the lid on the team.
Right.
The good news is you're the lid. Yes. So if you get better, everyone and everything else will get better. So I just need to get better every day. As much as I'd like to accuse the worship leader, It's always a worship leader gets blamed, you know. I need to get better. And if I get better, man, it's amazing what happens. So everybody can take responsibility for that.
Yeah, that's very good. That's very good. Well, I've really appreciated this conversation. This has been just been fantastic. Obviously, we've just given an overview of a couple different ideas here today. If people want to track with you, kind of like find the book, I'm assuming they could pick the book up at Amazon and where finer books are sold. But if they want to kind of track along with you, what's the best way for them to do that?
Yeah, couragetolead.com. That's where everything is. And tracks with me, they can find me and tons of free leadership and organizational health content there. But obviously, we'd love to be their coach. Mm-hmm. And we have a great, great team of coaches that can walk one-on-one with them. And we love to walk with a leader and or church for 12 or 18 months at a time. I mean, produce some fruit, make a difference. So that's always the end game for us. I told you offline, I am a writer. I am a speaker. I'm not professional either one. I did stay at a Holiday Inn Express. You know, I'm a coach and we're coaches. That's what we do at the end of the day.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Sean, I appreciate you. We'll link up to that in the show notes if people want to go there, or I'd encourage you to go to couragetolead.com and sign up and get on their, you know, free list and track with Sean. He really could be, helping his organization could be real help to you at your church. So appreciate being on the show today, Sean. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you, buddy. Great to be with you.
Thank you for tuning in to this week's Unseminary podcast. Don't be shy. We'd love to connect. Check out Unseminary Inbox. You can sign up at unseminary.com and we'll send you helpful training resources every week. Plus, you'll gain immediate access to our exclusive members area with tons of resources you can use. Connect with Rich on Twitter at Rich Birch or through email, rich@unseminary.com. Don't forget to check out the show notes for this episode at unseminary.com. It includes links to what we talked about today and more. Leave a comment. We'd love to hear from you. Did you enjoy today's episode? Drop by iTunes and leave a review. Thanks again for tuning in to this week's Unseminary podcast. Join us next week when we'll learn more stuff we wish they taught in seminary.